Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. Let's dive in. So when you are an attorney under an enduring power of attorney, you're making decisions on behalf of the principal, okay? And when you are an attorney, you're effectively acting as kind of like an agent, and you have obligations primarily under the Powers of Attorney Act. I think it's 1988 in Queensland. So that's really important. And it dictates what you can and can't do as an attorney, things that you need to do. For example, as an attorney, you need to keep records. Okay, that's one example. I will often have people come to me when they are attorneys and I guess are very conscious of their role and kind of want to get an understanding of what it entails and what they need to do. And what I say to people most of the time is like, listen, your number one role is to act in the best interests of the principal, okay, and act reasonably and diligently. If you are doing that, you are doing the job. Like, congratulations, you are doing a really good job. And I am going to do an episode on attorneys behaving badly in a couple of weeks, but I just want to really reiterate for people that if you as an attorney are acting in the best interest of the principal, that's the number one thing you have to do. So when we're trying to decide on who should be an attorney for someone, it really is a conversation of who you can trust and what can you trust them with, really. For most couples, it's quite easy. You know, you have your spouse as your first attorney. That's a really easy one. The hard bit comes next. Like, what do we do next after that person isn't available, or for an individual, who is that next person? Most people will look to their children, and that's a great option. If they're over 18, that's a great option for an attorney. I think what you have to think about is it's not the trust aspect. I think trust is probably the number one thing. You know, if you don't trust the person, they should no way should they be your attorney. But there are some ways you can kind of make some protections for yourself. And one of those ways is really around having joint attorneys so that they have to make decisions jointly. That can have some complications because you obviously they need to make decisions jointly. But I think two, if you have two people as joint attorneys, that's a really good way to give some protection. But also, I think, allow the attorneys to have someone to lean on. I say the same thing about executors. You know, it's nice to have two, just to have someone to lean on, to talk through the decisions with. But what I find is that most people will have all of their adult children, or even though I recommend not having more than three because it just gets overly complex paperwork-wise, I guess. But having two or three attorneys acting jointly and having people you trust is super important. And when you're thinking about the attorneys, also be mindful that you can split the decision-making power out. So you can have attorneys that just deal with health, and you have attorneys that can just deal with your financial decisions. That's a nice way to get everyone included, but not be worried about the kind of decisions. So I will often hear, and if you're watching the video, I'm rolling my eyes because I hate this excuse, but this is what I often hear. I often hear, oh, I can't have so-and-so doing the health. She's just too emotional. Oh, an emotional woman, here we go. But anyway, that's what I hear. So you can split out the kind of people. I'll often also hear, oh, so-and-so's not crash hot with money. I don't really love their monetary decisions. Make them a health attorney, you know, and have someone else as your financial, or don't have them as an attorney at all. Like this, I can't emphasize enough that this is when you are incapacitated. You know, you can't make decisions for yourself. You want to be able to trust your attorneys. And I think that's super, super important. As I mentioned before, attorneys are under obligations under the Powers of Attorney Act. Now, they're quite wide. The really big ones is obviously acting in the best interest of the principal, accounting for records. Like, that's a big one that a lot of people don't realize as well. And I find you just have one of two people. Some people are just kind of blasé about their role, but other people are very strict in what they do. Obviously, I'm a lawyer, so I like the strict people, you know, keeping those records. But the main thing I say to people is make sure that you're acting in the best interests of the principal. That's what you have to do. Last year, I actually attended a conference, a succession law conference, where His Honor Justice Porter actually spoke about his role in having a brother who was he was physically disabled. He wasn't intellectually disabled, just physically disabled, and the role of being a substitute decision maker for him and things that you need to think about and just going through the principles. And it was such a fantastic talk in how he just explained what you need to think about. It's more than just their best interests. Like, best interests should be number one, but you really also need to consider other things like the principal's wishes, for example. How much are they able to communicate with you, and how much should you be including their wishes in your decision making? I think those are all really important considerations when you are acting in this attorney role. Now, where I get involved for people in enduring powers of attorney is usually attorneys coming to me, being appointed, and saying, I have some of the usuals, like, what do I do? Can I do X, Y, Z? But one of the really complex things I have when people come to me is around, listen, I am an enduring power of attorney for, you know, my parent. They are saying they want this. The doctors are saying they can't do this. What do I do? Okay, and that's a super hard position. You know, you want to do the right thing by your parent, but you also want to make sure that you're doing the right thing under the enduring power of attorney. And what I usually say to those people is, you're doing it right now. You're doing what you should be doing. You're getting extra advice. You're talking it through, and you're figuring out a plan moving forward. So in those circumstances, it's usually just a one-off. That's enough to just guide them through. So it's really making sure that you're, you know, following the best interest, but also taking all the advice around you. I also find that for some people, it's a really easy role. There's not a huge amount to do. For some people, it can be super, super complex. If there's conflict within the family, I find that a very difficult, for that person to be attorney quite often. And it just really depends on the circumstances. So I think that if you're a principal appointing someone in an enduring power of attorney, the number one thing you need to make sure is that you trust that person. It's number one. If you're an attorney acting for a principal, I think the number one thing you need to do is make sure you're aware of your obligations and you're acting in the best interest of the principal at all times. And I think I have jabbered on quite enough about this attorney role. So if you want any further information, you have a situation that you need some advice about, you can hop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. I also have heaps of information on my website about enduring powers of attorney and attorney roles. So you're more than welcome to, you know, read those, share this podcast, share those blogs, email me, not a problem. So next week, we're continuing with our enduring powers of attorney, and we're going to talk about a very controversial topic in the estate planning lands of when should an enduring power of attorney start. Okay, I know it doesn't sound controversial, but it is very controversial. So let's save that controversy for next week. I will speak to you then. Have a great week. Bye. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, you can pop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.